The following podcast is a member of the Great Big Owl family.
Hello and welcome to a brand new My Mate Bought a Toaster. My name's Tom Price. That one over there, her name is...
Samantha Baines.
Hooray for Samantha Baines. And joining us today, Dane Baptiste. Hello.
Hello.
How are you?
Last name Baptiste. First name Danes. Better than Baines.
Harsh.
It's the first draft of that jingle, so I'm probably going to scrap it.
I think that's the final one. I think we're good to go. That was amazing.
Okay, there you go.
Danes better than Baines. Dane, you've let us into your Amazon history, which is a very dangerous but noble thing to do. Thank you so much, because we're going to find out a lot about you now. Are you ready for this journey?
Definitely are. I'm relatively confident. I feel like there's nothing I have to hide from a legal standpoint.
Yeah.
Or a lawful one.
All right, so Dane, we're going back to 2008. This is when your first order was made.
Oh, cool.
Tell us about the Dane Baptiste of 2008. What was he doing in late May?
Hating his life.
Okay, all right. Was he really? What were you doing?
Working in an office.
Okay.
And, living a lie.
Okay.
Basically, I think, yeah.
Ideal.
Yeah.
So I think I just started working at Auto Trader. Auto Trader Media Group. Oof. And, it was not a great experience. My experiences at work was basically like, not me bringing it up, but people would be like, did you go to university, Dane? And I'd be like, yes. And then I would be reminded in every single job by my line manager, you may have a degree, but I'm your boss.
It means nothing now.
Yeah.
Wow.
Every time. And it's not like I'd bring it up.
Yeah.
Because it wasn't like, you know, I got a 2-2. So it wasn't like, by the way, everybody. And it was a 2-2 from the University of Bradford.
That's great. Nothing wrong with a Desmond from Bradford.
Nothing wrong with a Desmond from Bradford. Mm-mm. But like, you know, or I like to call marijuana masters. But I felt like...
I once dated a Desmond from Bradford.
If you listen to
Desmond, so life could be much worse.
Okay, fine. Life seems to... you're saying it was bleak in 2008, but on the 30th of May, you bought the Wu-Tang Manual. This cost you £11.74.
Yes.
Tell us about this. Is this helped you in life? Is this like some sort of biblical experience?
No, it has helped me in life. I think I bought it because I was beginning to try and assimilate into corporate life. And you know, people read books and crap on the train. So I was just telling you, one of those civilian losers...
But did you sit in your corporate Auto Trader office at lunchtime with the Wu-Tang Manual in front of you? Because if you did, that's brilliant.
No, well, I did. Well, no, I, at work, I used to just read manga online.
Brilliant.
But that was the to and from was my book of Wu-Tang written by the RZA. And it was actually rather inspirational.
Is it really, didn't you?
Yeah. So far as just, you know, just talking about their early beginnings, and he describes like, you know, how the concept of the Wu-Tang emblem began, and how that began as artwork. And basically he had a concept plan to kind of, I guess, saturate the industry with their brand, and how that was able to precipitate into beginning with music, and then transcending to clothing.
Very strong brand of the Wu-Tang there. I think it's the
point where there's some people, I think, who not necessarily have that much affinity with the culture and with rap per se, but it's such a distinguished brand that, you know, you get any Hackney hipster wearing a Wu-Tang jumper to yoga.
So. Yeah.
To yoga, downward dog.
What are the reviews like?
Well, if anyone doesn't know what this is the first written introduction to the philosophy and history of hip-hop's original dynasty, the Wu-Tang Clan.
Okay. What is the philosophy of the hip-hop group, the Wu-Tang Clan? Do we know? Dane, do you want to give us it in a very short sentence?
Yeah, that they ate nothing to fuck with.
Okay, great.
Great.
Okay,
ideal.
Cool. Yeah, that makes sense.
Some lovely reviews, 75% five-star reviews. Mm-hmm. Buy it, said Miss Mafia.
Okay.
If you're a Wu-Tang fan...
Miss Mafia, buy it, please. Okay, be polite.
Yes, come on,
I mean, it is in capitals also. Yeah. If you're a Wu-Tang fan, buy it. Great gift for any fan or a good addition to any collection.
Okay. There has to be a Wu-Tang fan club, doesn't there? Is there a Wu-Tang fan club? Can we do that? Do you know about the Wu-Tang name generator?
Yes.
Whoa.
Because this is where Donald Glover got his name to become Childish Gambino.
He put his name into the Wu-Tang name generator, which I've got in front of me, actually. So if you put in Donald Glover, out comes Childish Gambino.
I think mine's a Dirty Scholar.
Shall we find out? Dane Baptiste. Let's find out our Wu-Tang names. Here we go. Your name, Dane Baptiste, is no longer Dane Baptiste. You are now the Erratic Specialist.
Ooh.
That's actually pretty accurate, to be fair.
I thought so.
Yeah.
Specialist.
I'm going to go with that.
Can I have one?
Yeah, here we go. Hang on, I'll do you nice.
By the way, there's no 1, 2, or 3-star reviews of this book on Amazon.
God, it must be.
Big fans.
One of the best reviewed books on Amazon.
I mean, it is only 12 reviews in total.
Samantha Baines, from this day forward, you will be known as Amateur Beggar. I mean, it's a definition of being, an actor. That's exactly what you are.
Is exactly.
Horrific.
As an, as an actor, that's what you are. And also, you
know. I think that's sexist.
That's how crowdfunding works.
I'm not an amateur beggar. I'm really good at getting stuff.
A professional beggar. All right, we'll update
professional
it.
Beggar then.
Okay. Yeah, pro beggar. Tom Price, from this day forward, you'll be also known as Excessive Dreamer.
That's cool.
Am I a dreamer? Am I a dreamer?
Why are yours nice and mine is like...
We don't know how to generate to work this algorithm.
You're bad at it.
Can't help you with that. So that was the very first thing you bought on Amazon in 2008. Lots of other things going on this year as well. You bought Civil War, Captain America.
Ahead of his time, because he knew that was going to be a big deal.
Yes. Yeah.
Pimp, the story of my life.
Yeah.
What's that? What's Pimp, the story of my life? Iceberg Slim.
By Iceberg Slim. Mm-hmm. It's a book written by a former pimp called Robert Peck, also known as Iceberg Slim. Yeah. And I guess, and it's also from which a lot of, so Jay-Z, one of his alternate nicknames was Iceberg Slim as well.
Right.
And so he's been massively influential on hip-hop culture. Mm-hmm. But I read the book because, again, this was interesting. And I was trying to, again, increase my... literary collection and wanted to read about some black pulp fiction and stuff, and yeah, it's a good book. It's so, and the reason why it's a very good book, and I think there was a time around, I guess, early noughties,
yeah,
where hip-hop culture's aesthetic was very pimp focused, sung by 50 Cent, P.I.M.P.
and yeah,
everyone had like pimp cups, if you remember, that was a thing,
without really knowing that a pimp was someone who sold ladies for money.
I think
pimp just became a different kind of brand.
Well, I think people kind of conflated with the idea of being a pimp of being someone that was successful or attracted women.
Yeah.
And then once you read the book, you realize what's required of you to become a pimp. You would never want to be a pimp, and anybody who had a modicum of respect for women could never become a pimp. And in fact, a lot of pimping, in terms of the aesthetic, is actually a lot of men unable to confront or deal with latent tendencies of homosexuality.
Really? Is that a common thing with pimps?
That's why there's so much pomposity in how they dress with the furs and like manicures, and their appearance is so pristine, is because they are, and also the actions towards women are supposed to come from like a latent misogyny or envy of women, and dealing with their homosexuality.
That's fascinating. And you got that all out of that book, did you?
Yeah, pretty much, yeah. Because Robert Peck, the writer, has an IQ of 164, and he escaped from prison twice, so he was actually a genius. So he was able to obviously do this research and psychoanalyze, and you know, he says that the whole thing began because I hated my mother.
That's fascinating. That's right, that's what he thinks.
Yeah.
That's why it all started.
His biological father had left. His mother had been living with a stepfather who was taking care of them in like 1920s, 30s America.
Yeah.
And then she had ended up seeing another pimp. They proceeded to rob and leave his stepfather.
Yeah.
And his stepfather had begun to have an inkling that his mother didn't love him anymore.
Wow.
And he'd said, you know, we're still together. And then she took her child and abandoned him. So he resented his mother for the rest of his life because of that. And that manifested in his behaviour towards the women that he was pimping.
This is a very dark turn for an early edition of My Mate Bought a Toaster to Take.
Like I said, it wasn't the best time of my life.
Normally, I mean, no wonder things were going dark at this stage. You're like, jeez, man.
It's actually a really good book. And like I said, it's because of the fact that it challenges these ideas where, you know, again, very early, I guess I was making myself aware of toxic masculinity, which we discussed now.
But this is early for you to be doing that. This is 2008 before it became a thing.
I am.
Look at you, Dane.
Trend starter.
Yes, really.
Well, I told you, yeah, but also.
I also
saw Civil War as well. Now that's one of the biggest film franchises ever, because you know.
And of course Astronomy for Dummies, which you then bought. Now Astronomy's gone huge as well, so once more.
I mean, it's still pretty big.
Yeah. But it was huge, endless.
I know, I bought that for somebody else though.
Really?
Yeah.
So you didn't read Astronomy for Dummies?
Consider yourself a dummy.
No. And also I'm more focused, I think astrology makes, I guess, is something that I'm would be more into than astronomy.
Astrology, really? So what, the more the...
Zodiac.
Okay.
What's your star sign?
So I am a Virgo, but I'm a Venus in Libra, Moon in Scorpio, and Aries rising.
Sure, okay, cool. Nice to meet you.
I'm Aries.
I'm Tom. Hi. I mean, So do you go for all that stuff? Do you go for the astrology stuff?
To an extent, I think that we are 70% plus water, which is an ionic substance. And therefore, it can be affected by alignments of planets and, you know, magnetic forces and stuff. And I think that can affect our moods.
Wow.
So, I do study stuff. I mean...
I love this. I love how we're going from pimps to the ionics. Yeah, the ironic substances?
Yeah,
ionic substances.
Yeah.
We could be ironic.
But I think, I mean, everyone kind of says that, you know, astrology is like quackery and it's bullshit. But I think if the fact that, you know, people like Mystic Meg and psychics continue to, reap... the benefits and make millions off of the idea of astrology, it means that there are people are obviously searching for something to define themselves by. Or people obviously aspire to have. Even people that would reject ideas about Abrahamic religion will still check their horoscope.
Yes.
And I feel like there is some element of us that does seek a spirituality.
I bloody loved Mystic Meg.
What happened to Mystic Meg?
Is she still alive?
I think she may have passed.
No, is she really passed?
But she might be like Batman now, like a symbol. So anyone can actually be Mystic Meg.
Yeah.
She's branded up like the Wu-Tang Clan.
Exactly.
Exactly.
She'll come.
What happens if you put Mystic Meg into the name generator of Wu-Tang Clan?
That'd be good. Let's do it. And by the way, if you want to read the Pimp book, it's got a lot of 5-star reviews. Lid says, engaging. The guy was an abusive bastard, but he writes about his brutal past in an engaging and charismatic way. His charm is definitely better suited to writing than manipulating women. Fascinating story, and I'm glad he has put that stuff behind him.
Great at writing sentences, awful at dealing with his own mother. Mystic Meg, if you're listening, your Wu-Tang name is Insane Hunter.
That's cool.
So, Dan, let's go to 2009. Now, we've already established that you are a trendsetter. You were tapping into themes of toxic masculinity and the Wu-Tang Clan back in the, you know, the late 2000s, before it really kicked off. And it's happened again, look, in 2009. February 2009, you've bought Flat Earth News. An award-winning reporter exposes falsehood, distortion and propaganda in the global media. This is by Nick Davis.
Yeah. It's a very dense book, though. It's very dense.
It's available on Audible.
Yeah.
Okay. In case anyone wants to listen.
Can I recommend Audible to people, please, because it's very dense.
Shall I read you the blurb? After years of working as a respected journalist, Nick Davies, in the shocking expose, reveals what really goes on behind the scenes of this contentious industry. From a prestigious newspaper that allowed intelligence agencies to plant fiction in its columns, to the newsroom that routinely rejected stories due to a racial bias, to the number of papers that accepted cash bribes, gripping, thought-provoking and revelatory, this is an insider's look at one of the most tainted industries.
And did you already have these suspicions before you read the book, or was it one of those eye-opening books of like, oh my God, Murdoch is evil?
I had these suspicions already, and you know, I guess by holographic principle, it's like my life is bullshit, and it's probably because I have been believed in the lies that I have been told so far as studying and getting a degree,
yeah,
and that put me in better stead to have a better life and more prosperity because the world's supposed to be meritocratic in a Western civilized democracy. And yeah. I was like, well, it's not really though, it's who you know, innit? So, and I was just kind of like, got the ball rolling for me to research, and I guess where I felt that these may have been more esoteric feelings, it was like seeing other instances of this being confirmed, I was like, so I'm not crazy, like this is all bullshit.
Yeah, nepotism is way more important than anything meritocratic. Any of your qualities are irrelevant, guys.
It is, and it goes so far, and it, you know, that goes as far up echelon society as like monarchy. But then I was just like, yeah, but then, you know, how can that work if you juxtapose that with evolution and Darwinist theory, whereby the fittest, the survival of the fittest and the strong survive?
Yeah, but it's now the survival of the socially fittest. If you can socially corrupt, without your qualities at a certain job, those are irrelevant, but if you can socially fit in and amalgamate and be in someone's tribe successfully,
yeah,
that is success, irrelevant of the skill, irrelevant whether or not it's you're a good surgeon,
it's success,
you know, the right person.
But then for, you know, for someone who's also studied business and the social science, it's like, well, then you're not able to realize you're never going to realize a maximum return on your investment because of the fact that, like, if you're not employing the most competent people to, you know, reach an optimum level of output or productivity within a company, then how is business and economy supposed to prosper?
Curveball, right? June Sarpong wrote an amazing book about this, about the untapped potential financially. She really boiled down the way we show racial bias or prejudice and all those things. She boiled it down into a book and put money on it and made it into a capitalist notion of just how much untapped potential there is out there with women who haven't got jobs or with people of colour who haven't got jobs. And it's horrifying because you're not following the quality, you're following people like yourself or whatever that is. It's amazing.
And people always talk about, oh, we've employed the best person for the job, but actually...
Never true.
Never true!
Because the way you've been brought up and the social and, you know, economic and all sorts of things, bias that you naturally have, means that you're not looking at people in an equal way.
Of course you're not.
And measuring
them. And I just was arriving at a point, I guess, psychologically, where I didn't want to be subject to those ideas and those structures.
Yeah.
I mean, it's something basic. We're supposed to be in a democracy where women form, there are more women in every country, every democratic country, than there are men. So then, if you've had instances where women have been denied a vote, or their vote's been reduced, or you've had instances of gerrymandering, then you can never be democratic. So I'm just like, it's all a lie. But then when you say that in the canteen at work, everyone just looks like you're crazy. So.
Everyone looks right through you.
Yeah,
well, Gargantua Pantaloon agrees. 4 stars. Read it and weep. The case is convincing. The media has a problem telling the truth or even getting at the truth.
So again, this is a decade before the phrase fake news was accepted into like popular narrative.
A phrase which that bastard Donald Trump gave birth to.
Well, that and, but then he did that at the same time while also giving birth via, you know, Kerrianne Conway of alternate facts. So essentially now you have an Orwellian paradigm within media whereby lies are the truth now and they're acceptable.
Horrifying. Yeah, but so the fake news, the invention of the idea of fake news,
yeah.
Forget actual fake news and forget how news is portrayed, but the invention of that brand of fake news, that is a right-wing thing, isn't it?
I mean,
it's owned by the right.
It's beyond that. It's fucking Orwellian. The right, I guess, have espoused it within our society, but yeah, and they as well as alternate facts,
yeah,
and it's insane that they have that duality now, where it's like you don't trust the media, but then if something is proven to be factually false, then it's an alternate fact.
Yeah. You
know? It's the same as when people aren't funny and they say they do anti-comedy in Edinburgh.
I love that. Yeah. It's a bit alternative. No, it's just weird.
You're not funny.
It's no jokes. Write some jokes.
It's like if I cheat on my wife, I'm not an anti-husband. Like, I'm committing infidelity, right? So. Yeah.
I love that so much. April 2010, you spent £43 on how to teach grammar. Why? Did you become a teacher or something? What's going on here?
No, although maybe I did buy that because... What year was that?
2010.
So I think at that point I quit my job at Auto Trader.
Oh, yeah, so Dane Baptiste the comic is about to happen at this point.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's learning about grammar because it's really important.
Because, you know, that's a big part of my job is being able to speak properly. But I think at the time I was working out what the hell I want to do in my life because obviously... I can't pay bills, dreams. So I think at one point I was going to do a TEFL course, teach English as a foreign language.
Yes.
That might be why I got that textbook.
Meaning and the English verb, the third edition. I mean, the first was my favourite, to be honest.
So I think it was those, I got those.
Yeah, okay.
Very expensive books, £19 each. It's
a waste of money, to be honest. Waste of money.
Waste spelt. W-A-S-T.
Some people, that homonym is confused by a lot of people.
What else have we got here? 14th of April, A Book of Legendary Creatures by Tom McGowan. Tell us about this.
I'd read it originally in primary school.
Okay.
And then it was so fucking scary, I couldn't sleep when I was a kid. I read it at like 7 or 8. But then I bought it back, and again, because some of the characters and some of the creatures that are in it, some of them you do see in folklore and stuff, and they have been used by like more mainstream, media companies like Disney and the like. But I was like, I just wanted to have it because I thought it was an interesting book. I thought it was quite fun. And I had an idea, I think, for like a graphic novel or something.
Okay.
I wanted to use it for inspiration.
Okay, where's that book now? Is it still inspiring you somehow?
It's still here. I'll say, I bought it twice.
You bought it on the 6th of April and the 14th of April.
I think I bought it for somebody else as well. I can't remember. But I may have cancelled it. But I will send you a synopsis for my graphic novel.
Yes, please. Now, I've never read a single graphic novel, guys. Is that remiss of me, Samantha, or should I?
I haven't. My sister's really into them. They're
pretty cool, man. Okay. And, it's books with pictures, so...
What's
not to like, basically.
Yeah, because I like looking at the images in my head.
Yeah.
But then to help those along, I can look at some images on a page as well.
This is it. Okay. And so if you read, for example, The Watchmen, which is obviously quite a big film, Zack Snyder directed, like originally was a graphic novel by Alan Moore.
Okay.
Alan Moore is also the novelist who reinvented Batman as the Dark Knight.
Yeah.
Which is that's the source material for the Dark Knight franchise that Christopher Nolan made as well.
Yes, which is when Batman got really good,
yeah,
let's be honest.
Exactly, yeah. So, I remember him saying, Alan Moore saying something about words are like spells, which is why we call it spelling. And we underestimate like how
that's
influential
amazing.
Words can be and
I
stuff
love
as well.
That.
So like something I'm trying to find like artistic inspiration to really take this leap and start doing comedy and doing something creative. So this is why I'm trying to take it as much as possible at this time.
Alan Moore was born in November 1953. He's an English writer known primarily for his work in comic books, including Watchmen, as you said, V for Vendetta, The Ballad of Halo Jones, and From Hell. He's regarded by some as the best graphic novel writer in the English language.
Whoa!
Yeah.
So okay. That's where you should start,
That's my starting point. Shall I do that then?
Alan Moore.
He's a really good one to start with.
So if I say I'm reading it or I'm watching it, that's the question. What are you reading over there? Well, I'm not reading, I'm watching. I'm looking. What are you looking? Is this, do you know what I mean? Am I reading it?
Regarding.
I mean, there are words regarding taking it in.
Most people that like graphic novels will be too nerdy to even have a conversation with you anyway.
That's ideal. If that means I'm going to get left alone, absolutely ideal.
Yeah, exactly.
Da-da.
Hello, I'm John Holmes, and yes, the last thing you need is another podcast that takes apart a television show and hacks through it like a cough going through a pensioner. Except wait, because this is the One Show in which myself and my guests force ourselves to watch a week's worth of TV's The One Show and then analyse it all in far too much detail. It sounds like a terrible idea, and it is for us. But for you, it's entertainment gold that's all over a programme you yourself have no intention of ever watching. The One Show, every Tuesday and Wednesday, wherever you get your podcasts.
Let's go to 2012. Samantha, go to 2012, right? There are two orders placed by Dame Baptiste. Mm-hmm. And now, these two orders tell a story, don't they? They tell a story.
Wow. God.
Yeah. One of them is an original Dell Studio laptop charger power supply with PC247's 12-month warranty and UK mains lead, £15.85. This guy's getting power to his laptop. And the other is a book by Dick Gregory. And what's that book called, Sam?
Shall we ask Dane what that book's called?
It's called An Autobiography. Go on, what's it called?
It's N-word and Autobiography. Save you bleeping it.
Thank you. So those are the two things brought into 2012. Which of those two things would you like to talk about more? The power supply to your laptop or N-word and Autobiography? Actually, no, I'm going to ask you. I want to know about N-word and Autobiography.
It was £1.50.
Yeah, which is an absolute bargain. And I recommend that everybody reads it. Dick Gregory is an African-American comedian who is the first African-American comedian to ever appear on US television.
Ever.
And wow. He appeared on Hugh Hefner's Playboy Hour, which was a televised show.
In the 50s?
Late 50s to early 60s.
Yeah.
And he essentially had said he would refuse to do the show unless he was able to sit on the sofa. Because obviously that was the late night talk show format in the States where you'd perform a bit of stand-up and then speak to the host. And obviously doing Jim Crow, if you were a black person, you wouldn't be able to do that. So he had insisted and refused. I think he'd refused to do Ed Sullivan. And then Hugh Hefner had taken the chance and put him on his show.
Right.
And allowed him to sit on the sofa.
Right.
And basically changed his entire career as a result of which.
So he's got to sit on the sofa. Because of course
he went from just trying to scrape together mere thousands in his life to, over the course of a year, becoming like a millionaire.
Wow.
And he was like, but at the same time, the black people that were paying for me and paying my bills initially got to a point where they weren't able to afford me, but I would never turn my back on them. And, at the height of his success, at some point, Dick Gregory became actively involved in the civil rights struggle. And, there's pictures of him with Malcolm X and Muhammad Ali and Martin Luther King. And basically has continued to use his millions to put into projects in order to research and combat against white supremacy in America up until his death in, I believe, 2017.
There you go.
And his estate and his children followed me on Instagram last year.
Nice.
And made my life, man.
That's amazing.
Oh, wow.
Do you ever feel then... do you want to have a cause? Do you have a cause? Do you have a thing like that? Because
I think you should, yeah. Because like I said, a big part of the procrastination process before you start doing something creative is looking at people and looking at your predecessors. And so I was going. So I did research and did up until the Dave Chappelle's and Chris Rock's. But then I was like, but who preceded them? And who was before Bill Cosby? And so got to Dick Gregory, and then found out about Paul Robeson.
Yeah.
And even work he did in the UK and stuff as well, and helping out Welsh miners and stuff.
Yes,
and
big in Wales, Paul Robeson. Yeah, the Mannix wrote a song about him, Let Robeson Sing.
Exactly, So it was like, these are men who realise wealth and fame and success, but despite that, still use their profile and their influence to do something positive. So I was like, well, if I want to do this and I'm going to invest everything into this, then I have to do it properly. And look how people have done it. So
yeah, you have to do it properly. I'm going to get a power supply for my laptop.
Well, yeah.
That's
don't get,
serious
don't get a Dell.
It needs to be charged.
I was in a tough place financially there. Do not get a Dell.
I don't know if you've built your shopping list here on Amazon, your purchase history, just for my benefit, but it's so impressive. I love that you've got a bit of Tolstoy, War and Peace. Have you actually read War and Peace?
I started, it's tough. Do you know what? The dumbest
you've got an annotated version.
I know,
but it goes,
tough.
Even an annotated version is longer than our natural lives.
Yeah. It's so hot. I think I might be on there as well, because when I first got a Kindle, I got The Origin of Good and Evil by Nietzsche. Mm-hmm. I've never felt so stupid in my life.
You've also got Chavs. demonization of the working class.
I've read that, Owen Jones. In fact, going back to what we said earlier on, I listened to it on Audible. Yeah, it's brilliant.
It's a good book. And
it's really good.
The reason why I bought it is because that was seemed to be an acceptable form of racism and classism when I started doing comedy.
Yep.
That everybody had a chav joke. And again, I'm somebody, if I'm going to opine or make a statement, then it should be researched, rather, because more than anybody else, I understand what it's like to be misrepresented in media.
Mm. Yeah.
So I was like, I'm not going to be, oh, people are chavs and blah, blah, blah. So I just wanted to do the research.
So that was for a joke. What about the complete works of Plato?
Just because I guess comedy and making observations involve some level of, I guess, anthropology or philosophy, because we're just musing and shit. So I was like, well... Yeah.
It all comes down to observations.
Yeah,
it's all about observations.
That's how I felt like with comedy and stuff, and people like Dick Gregory, when I heard his more modern stuff, it wasn't necessarily that he was doing gags and punchlines, but people would just talk and people would hang on his every word. And once you start, like I said, with observations, which are on a superficial level, I feel in this art form, what you're aspiring to do is really transcend all of our physical things, like whether you're interpreting yourself as a woman or as a black person, a Christian, a Muslim, is that really we are, it's a stream of consciousness. So then if you're still aspiring to make observations from your consciousness, then I guess it gets to the point of philosophy.
Yeah.
When you're no longer inhibited by like...
Yeah, but that's when the connections happen. Exactly, and anyone of any background or any class or anything... You connect because you've got the same experience.
And that's my point exactly, is that there's a quantum within all of us where it's just, you just perceive stuff as conscious, not as a woman or as a man and stuff. And if whether it's like before you go to sleep or when you just wake up, there's just this real quantum of time where that's how we're just consciousness. And I'm just like, how to get there? And that's why I got that book.
Okay, listen, screw Mystic Meg, right? Why don't they have, instead of an astrology section at the end of the newspaper, why don't they put Dame Baptiste spouting all this stuff at the end? This is brilliant and based on facts rather than astrology, which is...
Mystic Meg has a real ring to it. What would you be called?
I would be Divine Dane.
Divine Dane, and you just write down a few like the things you've just said, and I read those at the end of my day's perusal of the Evening Standard.
Exactly. And then at the end of Divine Dane, and also that's seamlessly transitioned into doing my appearance on RuPaul's Drag Race.
Oh,
is that what you're doing?
One day, I hope.
The dream.
One day, I hope.
We all hope.
Yeah, of course.
At this stage, Dame Baptiste has left Auto Trader behind, and he's reading all these books. He's consuming stuff. He's out there. He's on the circuit. We're in 2014 now. He's bought Regain for Men Hair Regrowth Foam.
Yeah.
How's that working out for you, man?
Terribly.
Guess who else is
None
using
of that stuff
that?
Works.
Guess who else is using that?
Are you using it currently?
Tried it. I bought a load. I'm on month four. No difference. I might as well have been smearing chocolate mousse on
my head. I think I spilled it on my chest as well.
A load of it. It definitely drips down my back and into my crack. Right. And that's where
it stays. So it stays.
You could get wax for that.
This
seems to be a very common thing amongst men.
Go on.
What waxing like their butt cracks?
Security, yeah, also that. No, security and insecurity around hair loss. Yes.
Which never used to be
head.
A thing, but I think it's because when media became a lot more youth focused, especially with comedy, because comedy used to be the thing where, like, if you were very talented but too ugly to be a rock star, you could be a very good comedian.
Yeah.
And, like, you know, and Phil Collins and Genesis and stuff, there's like, they look like old music teachers.
Yeah. Elton John.
Yeah, Elton John. Mm. But then there's a focus. And then I was like, do I want to conform to this? And I started trying this stuff on my hair. And then I was like, none of this stuff fucking works.
Did you think you had to have a full head of hair to be a good comedian?
No, because no one could tell anyway, because I'm like 6'1 anyway, so no one can really see. I cut it quite low anyway.
I'm 6'3 and I keep my hair very short now. The shorter you keep it, no one really notices. But I do. It's weird. I have moments where I'm very paranoid about it. And it's because of age, because you feel like, I look old.
You think I'm looking old, but then...
No, you don't look old at all.
Exactly. So I think it actually worked out. What is that face for?
There is a question under this hair regrowth.
Oh, my God, yeah.
Saying, is this suitable for use on my son's face? He's nearly 7 and still has no facial hair. Thanks.
Someone's trolling.
That's nonsense.
What?
That's
not
really... Someone's trolling.
Why is this no good for men over 50? Is another question.
Keep going through the questions. Me and Dane can answer them, because me and Dane have both used this product.
Is this product a legitimate Regain product? It's just about this specific
thing. Yeah, I don't know.
Would this work if you were only applying it to the frontal and temporal hairline?
Well, who wants to grow hair on their temple? What do you mean?
Oh, temporal is in... Someone thinks their brain is where their hair is. That's just someone who thinks they're so bald that you can see their brain. That's why they're like, my temporal lobe and my frontal lobe. Would it grow the hair? Grow there.
Does that mean you can see my thoughts?
Yeah, exactly.
I need to cover those up with hair.
The answer is the hair doesn't come from your brain, sir.
Yep,
okay,
answer.
Another genuine question. Can this be used on the naughty areas?
What do you mean the naughty areas? Like, are we talking the naughty step? The bottom steps of the stairs? That's the naughty area.
Around your why would you want more hair around your penis?
Maybe you don't have hair on your penis or and you want vagina. Some.
Everyone knows you look shorter and longer grass.
When I was a kid and I was a late bloomer, if there was something I could have rubbed on my balls to make hair grow, I would have probably been like, let me get a little bit of that.
Check the handwriting. Is it a child who wrote that? Maybe it's someone who's a bit younger. Okay, go on, next question. We keep them coming. I like this.
I'm 17 and turn 18 in a few months. Do you think I will be okay to use this? I'm not sure it actually makes a difference.
It won't make any difference, but you're definitely okay to use it because it is a massive placebo.
Yeah. It's also like... 17 and already going bored. This is
How old were you when you started to lose it then?
30-something.
30-something,
yeah.
Yeah, me too.
I had a good run, to be fair.
Exactly. And I did what I needed to get done while I had hair.
And also, it's fine. And then I was like, people were like, what's this doing here? And I'd be like, I'm trying to get some hair. And then people was like, you don't need to get that. You look better bald. And I'm like, are you sure? And then, so it's fine.
So nice now. I'm so jealous of you. You've done it. I need to do it. I need
to just do this.
Yeah.
I mean, but it actually suits me, and I actually cut my own hair now, so...
Saved a fortune.
It's fine.
Is this any good to promote facial hair? I'm 23 and need a bush.
You don't need a bush. That actually helped me. Even though I've bought caffeine and stuff since then, it's helped me to realise that all of these things are superficial fads, because... Remember when beards were like in 2016 and 17 when beards were the thing and everyone was like, you should have a beard?
Yeah, you mean the reason I've got a beard now in 2019 because I'm catching up with the fashion.
And they were like, be a man and have a beard. And then people were like, oh, it's okay for men to cry. And then people were like, we're gender fluid. So it's like, there's just the fad changes all the time. Just be yourself, innit?
Can I have this on carry-on luggage in the airport?
If it's under 25 mils, you can. Yeah, otherwise, you're screwed, mate.
We're great at answering these questions. Any more for any more? You're still buying it in 2016, at end of 2016. You went for a
not
while.
For me.
Oh, really? That was for the naughty parts by 2016.
Yeah, I have a real ass throw.
Are you a regain dealer? Is that what you're doing? Just selling that stuff on?
Is the packaging discreet?
No, I've had comments.
It really is not discreet.
Dame Baptiste, very much now out on the circuit doing stand-up comedy. 2016, 11th of July, you bought Mike and Ike Berry Blast Theatre Box, 170 grams. Basically, you're buying sweets on Amazon. I mean, is that really what the internet was made for? So you could buy sweets?
They're American sweets.
Really?
At the time, I couldn't afford to at a flight, so.
Now you just fly there and buy it.
Yeah, things have gone well. He's got telecash now. He's got to nip over to LA.
I'll go over there. And they've been discontinued now as well, so it's hard to buy them in shops. So when I used to go to the States, my aunt would take me to Costco to stock up on my American sweets, and they were discontinued.
What?
I know, so you only have to get a few of the remaining boxes. Luckily, because they're completely full of like cornstarch, they'll last for like decades.
Cornstarch is the very worst. It's the complete devil. Considering how much Regain and sweets you've been buying in 2017, how have you not got masses of long hair going down to your ankles and diabetes? Kellogg's Fruit Loops.
What it looks like I'm doing is basically like putting together a massive, massive way of snaring like paedophiles.
Just kidding.
And I'm like, hey, everyone come to my house. I've got Rogaine, got sweets for the kids. And it's like a massive, massive child molestation sting.
All right, listen, we need to crash to the present day. The 2nd of January, 2019, right? £84 spent on two bottles of Moët Chandon champagne rosé. I love rosé champagne.
It's very nice.
It is very nice. Any reason you got this or just because it was January 2019 and things were going well on Planet Baptiste?
I thought I was going to be a dad.
Is that actually what
you
got?
Yes, I should probably cut that part out. It's maybe too much. No, it was just New Year's, I think.
Well, it was the 2nd of January, so yeah.
Exactly. So it's still New Year's somewhere.
Yeah. Whoa! 22nd of January, 2019. £125 on a Cherry Tree Furniture black leather LED bed.
Oh, hello.
We're back at the pimp, aren't we? We're back where we started.
Yeah, to embrace who I was.
Tell us about this.
It's just a bed, man, and it's just got a light at the bottom of it, and it's just very nice.
It's got a light
at the blue light at the bottom,
and it can change
colour
as well.
Right, but that's like a Vauxhall Corsa in a supermarket car park.
But it doesn't go anywhere, so it's cool, and I can sleep in it.
Do you get a lady back to your bed and go, oh, watch this.
Hang on.
Do you know what? I've completely forgotten, you know? It's just for me. I just like to create this ambience. Like I'll have the nice light, soft light under the bed and candles and stuff, and it just relaxes
it's
me.
It's blue, though. It looks like you're taking off.
You can change colour.
Okay, so what colour do you normally have?
Depends. If someone's like, I'm a Prince fan, you can go purple.
Purple, that. Yeah, purple for us.
Yeah.
Wow.
And then it's like...
I'm a fan of the artist pink. So we'll go for the colour.
Red light special. Mm-hmm. The bees are going extinct. Give me some honey, love.
Well, A-Pit says stylish.
Happy St. Paddy's Day.
Can we have a
stylish and sturdy.
Is this a review?
A-Pit, yeah, five stars.
Any other reviews?
Stylish and sturdy. We love it. Took two of us to construct just to help fathom the pictures. It's stylish, sturdy, a great size. That's just beds, isn't it?
I want to interject and say it's terrible.
Is it actually?
It's fucking terrible.
Why?
I had to get TaskRabbit to help me fix it. And I already had a bed, which was fine. Right. And my housemate had a crappy bed, and I gave him my old bed.
Yes.
Thinking I'd get a new snazzy bed.
With LED lights on it.
LED lights on it.
And who was the TaskRabbit person you got over? Because TaskRabbit is a hilarious thing. This is the app where you get random people to come and like screw things into walls for you.
I can't remember his name, but he did two things for me, because he also helped me with my IKEA wardrobe, which has also broken recently.
Celio Shaves said, one star, not strong enough.
Oh, hello, Celio.
Jordan said, bed breaks the first night of sleeping in it.
I'm only
16 and weigh 10 stone. Mm-hmm. And the first night I slept in it, the headboard has broke while I was sleeping.
That's so weird, waking up with a broken headboard.
And the left leg of the bed has just snapped and broken.
Oh, dear. It's not the highest quality.
He's not 10 stone.
Listen, yeah, exactly. The lights have to end. Do you know what? I think this is a good place to leave it, because this is a great order from 2019. And this for me, completes the My Mate Bought a Toaster journey of Dane Baptiste. We've got a guy who starts off reading about the Wu-Tang Clan, dreaming of becoming a comic, right? Whilst working at Auto Trader. This is all fair to say. And now look at you. You've bought yourself a bed that lights up. What more do you want from life?
With champagne like a piece of shit.
Drinking champagne, you've turned into a pimp. Literally turned into a pimp.
Rosé champagne.
It's nice. It's really nice.
Dane Baptiste, thank you so much for joining us. And I have found out so much about you.
Thank you.
Not all of it good.
I know.
But all of it very funny.
An erratic specialist. So, you
know. Thank you, Dane.
Thanks.
Thank you, Samantha Baines.
Amateur beggar.
Thanks, amateur beggar. My name is Excessive Dreamer, and it would be an excessive dream of mine for you to give us a follow at ToasterPod on Twitter. And we've got more of these coming very soon. Thank you again to the wonderful Dane Baptiste. Goodbye.
Bye.
I want to say no more. I want to say no more.
GreatBigOwl.com.
My name's Pete Allison.
And I'm Dave Cribb, and we do a podcast called Friends with Friends.
Each week we invite a guest on, ask them to pick their favourite episode of Friends, and then we talk about it in far too much detail.
Basically, if you like the show Friends, and you like it when people take things far too seriously, then you might well like this podcast. Search Great Big Owl on your podcast app of choice, and you'll find Friends with Friends right there.